This is the Orange Podcast, conversations with Orange City Council for the local community.
This is Alan Reader, and just when you started to wonder if it was ever coming back, this is the Orange Podcast. More stories from the people wandering the corridors of the maze that is Orange City Council. Today on the show, how a COVID outbreak in a city about an hour and three quarters away affects the way Orange City Council delivers its services to the community. But first today, some provocative facts about road building that are guaranteed to get that barroom conversation going when the topic comes to potholes. Are they inevitable? That's coming up in today's show. You're listening to the Orange Podcast. Over the last 4 or 5 years, things have been pretty dry in Orange. Our dam has been almost empty. Over the last few months, the dam has filled up, but it's brought back one of those other things that come along with wet weather. 6 months ago, we didn't have anyone on our council Facebook page complaining about potholes. Guess what? They're back. Just to find out some more about where potholes come from and why people get so angry about them. Wayne Gailey is our works manager who coordinates the approach to dealing with potholes and repairing them. Wayne, are potholes inevitable?
Alan, potholes are unfortunately inevitable.
That's not what people want to hear, Wayne.
No, I know.
Why is that the engineering truth?
Because roads deteriorate over time, and water, as good as it is in our dams, it's not good for our roads. And with the weather conditions that we've had, similar to, I guess, 5 years ago, 2016, which was when we had the last of the inflows, when the dam last overtopped, was 2016, wettest winter on record, I believe. We've just had the wettest July in 30 years. So the water's there, it's in the road, it's in the pavement, and we're suffering accordingly.
Let's get down to the granular level. We've got a pavement road with some mixture of gravel and asphalt. There's a little crack there. One of the stones comes off. What happens next?
Yeah, so the water infiltrates, and as a tyre passes over that void where the water is, water doesn't compress. That's the physics of it, and it actually then just blows out the hole, that little crack, to become a slightly bigger hole. More water gets in, and things just progress from there.
How busy have your crews been than they usually are fixing potholes?
Yeah, so, we've been super busy. There's only so much we can do as effective repairs when it keeps on raining. Soon as we get a bit of a breather in the weather, we're out there, and we've had four crews where we'd normally have two crews. Over a two-week period, we put in approximately 126 tonnes of what we call cold mix asphalt.
There's lots of barbecue stopper experts out there, Wayne. They'd like to tell us how we should fix potholes. Let's look at some of the problems that come up. So if you put that mix that you talked about into a wet hole, that's not going to fix it, is it? But will it make it safer if it's raining at the time?
Yeah, 100% correct, Alan. What we'll do is throw that mix in, and look, most of the time it's going to hold, and it will then provide a safer surface for people to travel over. So, you look at some of our roads are 100 kilometres an hour. So, you know, we want to make sure we get something in there to keep the travelling public safe on the roads.
And then when it's dry, how does your approach to fixing potholes change?
Yeah, look, it's similar but more effective, I guess, when there's less water already in those potholes. And we can then also undertake more permanent repairs, which are obviously more time-consuming. Well, so we can do a number of things. We can go through and add a stabilising agent. We pulverise up the road and we put a new seal on. We can put some cold mix into the potholes and then put a seal over the top. So there's a number of different approaches that go all the way to a full rebuild like we've done on roads like Burrendon Way and, the Cargo Road and all that sort of thing.
But essentially, pothole repairs is a band-aid. It is a temporary thing until you get back to do something more major.
Correct. That's right. Yep. And it also helps to stop those potholes from spreading if you can get to them early enough.
The other barbecue stopper expert question, Wayne, why don't you just build the roads better in the first place and then these magical potholes wouldn't appear?
Yeah, look, it's a tough one, and it's I guess if we had an unlimited budget, then we could build a freeway style road everywhere. But we don't have that unlimited budget, and we have to try and work that balance between have a cost effective construction and accept that over time there might be a few failures that occur in that road that we attend to. But look, it doesn't matter what road you build, concrete highway down to, on the Hume Highway, for example, over time that concrete deteriorates and it has to be replaced. So when we're working with the materials that we're working with, we aim for a 20-year design life, and we understand that we're going to have to undertake maintenance at a certain period of time on that road.
When I go up the North Coast and drive along some of those really squeezy highways with steel reinforcing and concrete and all sorts of layers and layers of stuff on top, how many million dollars per kilometre, I wonder, does it cost to build those? If you had spent your road budget on concrete roads, how many kilometres would you build, Wayne?
Oh, yeah, I'd be lucky to get 500 metres done. Yeah, that's the reality of it. So it's just not feasible. We'd look, where we can leverage grant funding, say for, some of the roundabouts we've done recently where you've got a different, we sit down and we undertake the calculations. We look at what's underneath what we're building on, and then we look at the type of loading that you would have, and a roundabout has a specific type of stress that's been put on it. So a lot of the roundabouts we build these days, we'll put a concrete base on those roundabouts, and they're obviously holding.
But when it comes to other sorts of roads around town, tell me why the roads you're designing and what you're building are fit for the purpose they're on.
Well, they're fit for the purpose because we would look at the road hierarchy. So your local road, your rural road that might have 100 cars a day, will have a standard for that type of road. If we know that there are a lot of heavy vehicles on the road, and you've seen the tubes that go across the road, they're traffic counter classifiers. They will tell us the number of vehicles and the type of vehicles that go on it. We can then determine how thick the pavement needs to be and what sort of surfacing we might need on that road.
On a personal level, you're managing the guys that do the work. How do you respond when you hear criticism that's largely unfounded? If you work for a council, so it's water off a duck's back, but would you like the people to be a bit more interested, a bit more informed?
I would. Look, I'm a human. The guys that work for me are humans too. They're residents. They're your neighbours. They're the people you see in the shops, and they have pride in their work. The same as anybody else, and nobody likes to be criticised for what they do on a daily basis. So, I'm all about informing people about what goes on or why things are done the way they're done. I think the sources like council's Facebook page and their website, I encourage people to, I guess, inform themselves before they make a judgment on what we do and how we do it.
Wayne Gailey, Works Manager, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Alan.
You're listening to the Orange Podcast. The Central West has been part of the region where COVID has raised its head again. It's brought to light just how much we were responding to this crisis as a region, not just city by city. To find out some more, Orange City Council CEO Dave Waddell. Dave, how many people do you know who've spent some time in Dubbo in the last couple of weeks are now affected by this?
Yeah, well, I know quite a few, actually. We've got maybe 10 to 15 staff who were there on the weekend, and, they're subject to stay-at-home orders. So on it goes. And we hear of sewage samples in Bathurst, and I see just now Parks has had a sewage hit, and then, of course, 24 cases now in Dubbo and two in Walgett. So, I think if we admitted it, we all knew it was coming sometime while there were, truck drivers and couriers and people moving around. And, and on we go into our second year, our third year. It seems often that time has stood still, I think, anyway.
And if people are wondering why you're sounding like you're in the background somewhere, we are trying this podcast interview by Zoom for the first time. How much can an organisation like Orange City Council get by with less people or having them work from home? Is it affecting things, Dave?
Well, it's not too bad for us because we've got a lot, we've got 150, 200 outdoor staff, and of course they can get about their business pretty well. Last time we went into lockdown or whatever it was, partial lockdown, we got our IT systems pretty well oiled so that a lot of our office workforce could work from home. So everything keeps going. There's little things that don't work. Of course, we had to close facilities like the pool, art gallery, museum. We're not taking money over the front counter, visitors centres really locked down. So, you could say we are performing, the city's still running, and we're still going pretty well.
The other challenge Orange City Council is facing was the decision taken a couple of weeks ago now by the state government to postpone the local government elections. We were going to have elect a new council in September. That's now back to December. How do you start to plan for that, Dave? How do you, does that mean lots of projects are going to go on hold, or is it a matter of getting on with it?
Well, it really is a matter of getting on with it. It did blindside us a bit. We probably could have predicted it. Anyway, you just, you go home and then you come back the next day and you think what it actually means. It was another 3 months of deferral. There's a couple of ways to look at it. The budget has been voted in by this council, so there's things in the budget, projects particularly, that we can get on with, and that's what we're doing. We try to get on with the low key routine stuff, and that's what we all need to remember. We've got a city to run, let's just keep going. The things we try to avoid are big decisions for this council. Even they're not in caretaker mode. We'd like to get the new council engaged, say, in projects like Future City. So we won't be doing big road projects yet. We'll wait for that new council. But there's plenty we can get on with. Seriously, we have got so much to do. The council voted $900,000 in footpaths. Well, they can all be done. Plenty to do. Things we can't do, of course. Yeah, there's quite a list of those.
For example, the Future City one that you mentioned, and again, the caretaker mode, because we're about to elect a new council, it's not fair, if you like, for this council to make those big picture decisions that will affect things for the next few years. So we're about to finish in the last few months of finishing work, say, in Lord's Place. The next couple of projects are being lined up. Does that mean we're going to leave those on the back burner for a while, or will we just try and get on with design? How does that work?
I will still, no, a good point. We'll keep going with the design so we're ready when the new council comes in, and then they can actually decide whether those projects go ahead or not. It's quite simple. We've got a fair bit of work to do. Remember, we went back to the drawing board with Anson Street, so that's still got a couple of months to run in terms of design. We've started community consultation on Lord's Place between Kite and Summer. Plenty of consultations still to come. So we just try to avoid massive decisions at this stage. Caretaker, you actually legally have to avoid massive decisions, but at the moment we're just getting on with business. COVID, of course, has, slowed us down a bit.
And as you mentioned, there are a whole lots of work that Orange City Council staff do that doesn't relate to elected officials on a week by week basis, meals on wheels, libraries, that sort of stuff. That work's just going to continue, isn't it?
That's right. I reckon it's probably 90% of our work is unaffected by council elections, certainly the deferral. That's not to say councillors aren't involved. It means that historically, they've set the policies, they've set the procedures, they've told us what they want in budgets. So we're just getting on with it, really.
David Ell, thanks for your time. Looking forward to a quiet weekend.
I am, yeah. I've got some cattle work to do, and I am looking at the forecast, and it says sunny. So I'm going to take that one and go for a bike ride.
Dave Waddell, thanks for your time today.
Cheers, Al. Thanks, mate.
And thanks for joining us for the show this week. Remember, you can download this show from the Orange City Council website or wherever you get your podcasts. From the Orange Podcast, this is Alan Reader. Bye for now.